This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. We're just a couple of weeks away from the date underlined in red for many people. That's the day income tax returns are due to the federal and state governments. Hopefully, you've been planning throughout the year so that the bottom line on your tax returns won't come as too much of a surprise.
The tax and regulatory environment has been changing a lot over the past year and a half in this country. For Roger Ferguson, the changes are affecting both his company and the people it serves. Ferguson is CEO of TIAA, the retirement and financial services firm that largely serves people in education and in nonprofit sectors. Ferguson was in Milwaukee recently, and we caught up with him then. Thank you for taking a few minutes to speak with us.
Well, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
TIAA was founded and run for a long time as a nonprofit. It has gone through changes in more recent years. How do you see the evolution of the company since you have been running it?
Well, the evolution of the company has two components. One is things that have changed, and one is things that have not changed. So what has not changed is that we still have our not-for-profit heritage, and our charter calls for us to operate in that fashion. We still are primarily focused on providing financial well-being for individuals and the not-for-profit sector. What has changed is we are building out capabilities that include retirement, which is our core service, but adding more, including banking, life insurance. Here in Wisconsin, we are involved in the 529 program, for example. And so what really has evolved over time is we've become a more of a full-service financial services firm, but with the same culture, the same heritage, the same values, and the same history.
And still geared largely towards working with people in the nonprofit world?
Still absolutely geared towards folks in the not-for-profit world, higher education, medical, cultural, and research. That's our home base.
The watchword in the financial and really many other industries in the last couple of years has been uncertainty. How much more certainty do you have now about the economic and tax climate after 14 months of the current administration and the way the economy is shaping up?
I think the watchword is always change. So there has been greater certainty around tax law because that's now been signed into law. But the places of uncertainty have to do with what looks like now a very positive macroeconomic environment. But one always has to be aware that the markets have been very, very strong for almost a decade now. And so many of us are observing and asking sort of questions around how long that's going to last. Personally, I think we've got some way to go in terms of reasonably good stock market performance, but we have seen an uptick in volatility of late. And so I'd say this is the time to be optimistic that good times will continue, but one should not be complacent.
I don't know exactly how old you are, but certainly as I was coming of age, the idea of planning for retirement was a salient one, seemingly no matter what your social strata was. I don't necessarily know that I see that from my view anymore. What are you seeing in terms of current attitudes towards saving for retirement among different generations?
I think you put your finger on it by saying it varies from generation to generation. For those of us who are older and aging baby boomers, we are now entering retirement, and so retirement is really front and center in our thinking. For the millennials, I think they are focused on getting started. They have a number of financial issues and challenges. In some cases, it's student debt. Others are, you know, getting married and starting a household. But those who have jobs, I would absolutely encourage them to put saving for retirement as one of the things that they're focused on, because they will eventually get to a place where they're going to need those retirement savings. For those that are in the middle, I've observed that they are also focused on, as we aging baby boomers are, starting the process of saving for retirement as they're getting, you know, other parts of their financial lives in order.
You know, given the mission of TIAA and it's so many, it's multiple
connections with higher education institutions, I imagine you have cause to meet younger people who are either in college or just getting out of college. And I wonder what you hear from them, the kinds of questions that they ask you most often.
Well, indeed, I do have cause to talk to younger people. I was just on the campus of the University of Wisconsin of Madison recently, and I heard a number of things. One is they are very interested in what are the lessons that we in the older generation can give them about their financial lives. So they are curious about that, contrary to what many people might say as a generalization. Secondly, they recognize the value of education. Again, I am talking to people who are on college campuses. And they're all also very interested in, you know, careers, career projections, how one develops a career and moves forward. So I'm very optimistic from the conversations I'm hearing with young people on campuses.
How were your own attitudes about retirement shaped by your upbringing?
I was very, very lucky to grow up in a household that valued both education and financial literacy. But one of the things I saw, particularly with my father, was saving and investing with a long-term perspective, knowing that retirement would be looming in the future, was an important lesson. And indeed, my father was very financially literate, didn't have much money, but he managed to actually take an early retirement from his job and lived on his own resources in retirement for almost 30 years.
Do I remember reading, was he a cartographer?
Yes, my father was a cartographer, a civilian map maker for the U.S. Army.
Well, and there seems to be something about that world that you know, when you are drawing maps for a living, you have to be able to understand the connections from one thing to another.
Absolutely. My father was very, very analytical. And as you point out, the ability to sort of see those kinds of connections carried over into him being very, very interested in financial matters as well. Very logical, very grounded, and very analytical.
There's a reason that roadmap is a metaphor.
Exactly right.
Can you share a little bit about your own path to the place that you are today and what lessons people might draw from it?
Sure. The first thing I would share is my path was not predictable or direct. And so I always tell people that there's no such thing as a career ladder. It's more like a rock climbing wall or the children's jungle gym out in the playground. You move left, you move right, you move up, you move down. So my career, I think, reflects that kind of uncertainty. The second element of my career that I think is relevant is it's really built around the amount of time I spent in higher ed. And so, you know, the other big lesson for me is you can build a very interesting, diverse 30, maybe 40-year career built off of making sure you invest in your own education up front.
Oh, I was just going to ask, and is there a certain amount of keeping your eyes open to those other handholds that you have to do?
Oh, absolutely. The way I describe that is a career is also involved in taking reasonable risks, you know, looking for those other handholds in a rock climbing wall analogy. And so being open to those opportunities when they present themselves, but making sure you're qualified to be successful. And that goes back to the issue of having ample education and building what we economists have called your own human capital.
Did I also remember reading correctly that is it true that you cleaned bathrooms while you were in college?
Yes, it is. So my work-study job for the first 2 years in college was cleaning bathrooms. It was not in any sense a glamorous job. But the lesson I learned from that is that there is no job that is so small that you wouldn't want to do it well. And that's another thing that I've taken with me on my journey through my career over the last 40 years or so.
The bathrooms at Harvard were not nicer than any bathrooms anywhere else.
Bathrooms are bathrooms, and you can imagine bathrooms that are used by college students are probably a lot less nice than other bathrooms.
I don't really want to imagine them
no,
at all, actually.
Yes, exactly right.
What about the lessons about leadership that you have gotten from others play into what you're able to accomplish today?
I think the main lessons I've learned about leadership is that leadership is really about exciting and attracting followers. And so one has to say, what are the skills that it takes to really bring followers along behind you? And I see four things. One is you have to have expertise. Individuals don't follow an amateur. Secondly, you have to be able to describe where you want to go and articulate that well in a compelling way. The third thing I think is often surprising to people is I've seen the best leaders are very empathetic. You know, if you're going to work with other human beings and want them to follow you, you have to understand where they're coming from. and recognize that they're just not cogs in your vision or your machine, but they've got their lives of their own. And the final element of leadership is around a certain amount of fortitude. The path is almost never straight. There are setbacks, and individuals don't want to follow a leader who is the first one to panic as soon as things don't go smoothly.
The number of African Americans running financial services firms is fairly low. Does that concern you, and are there things that you do to try to change that?
It absolutely is something I think should be of concern to all of us, in the sense that we know that diversity and inclusion throughout an organization, including diverse perspectives at the top of the organization, can often lead to better outcomes and better changes and better solutions. And secondly, we understand that we live in a world that's really becoming more and more diverse, and so it's important for all businesses to reflect that. What I try to do to deal with that is to be, one, forthright about this as an issue. Two, hopefully I can serve as a bit of a role model. And I do spend a fair amount of time on college campuses trying to interact with all sorts of students to indicate to everybody just by my presence that, you know, leadership comes in all sorts of shapes, sizes, and colors.
At some point, do you stop noticing when you walk in the room that there are really not very many leaders of color?
I don't think that you ever really stop noticing that. The question is then, how do you react to it? And my view is that you react to it by being the best leader you can possibly be. If you happen to be the only person of color in the room, then I think your job is to continue to do the best you can. You don't have to take the burden for the entire race, and you shouldn't feel, I think, in any sense stymied by being the only person of color in the room. The way I think about it is a relevant factor, but it's not the only factor.
Roger Ferguson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
Roger Ferguson is CEO of the financial services firm TIAA. We spoke with him while he was in Milwaukee to speak at an event organized by the Lubar School of Business at UW-Milwaukee.